Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
California.
And when we come back, Dr. Jeremy Silver joins us. The Week in Health is next. It is 941. And this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Later in the show, Kevin Hart, who is in the Chicago area, at DraftKings at Wrigley Field at 10:30 this morning. Right now, though, the Week in Health, our pal Dr. Jeremy Silver joining us, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Doctor, Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Happy New Year, Dean.
Wonderful to have you on with us. All I've been hearing in the news lately regarding health issues, neurovirus. It's we need to be a little concerned about this right now, don't we?
Well, it's an old familiar friend, and I don't mean a nice kind of friend. It's a very contagious virus that causes vomiting and diarrhea. Many people refer to it as the stomach flu or the stomach bug, but it is not technically a flu virus. It is a gastrointestinal virus that makes people extremely sick for a short period of time, and then they tend to get better. But sometimes folks can get so dehydrated so quickly they need some help, and we're there to help them in the emergency department if that's the case.
Dehydrated more than you can replenish with water or a sports drink. You're talking about like sort of intravenous saline, something like that?
You got it. Or just, you know, the viruses that attack the gastrointestinal tract, your tummy, if you want to think of it that way, or your colon, that part of your bowel that you make the poop in, without getting too gross about it, those areas get seized up. And the virus starts replicating, making copies of itself, and your body tries to fight it off. And all of those white blood cells create a fluid rush, and it all seeps into your gastrointestinal tract. Your body just starts pushing it out, for lack of a better description, and you can't keep up, either because you simply lose the fluid too quickly and your body goes into shutdown mode, or alternatively, you're just too darn nauseous to get anything, or lastly, you're so crampy that every time you try and take a sip, it just seizes up and makes you hurt. So for those reasons, we can help not just with the fluid, but with the symptoms.
Yeah, what I've heard from people who have had it is that it just knocks you for a loop. How do you catch neurovirus in the first place? Is it something airborne? Do you have to touch the wrong thing? How do you get it?
Yeah, it's a surface virus, so it lives on surfaces, and, you know, again, this is, you know, the kind of icky stuff of medicine, but it's important for people to know that you really need to wash your hands after you're using the bathroom, and so if maybe you didn't wash it up, or you forgot, or some actually more likely a little kid touched a doorknob, and you touch a doorknob, boom, it's there on you. And, you know, that very quickly you scratch the corner of your eye, or you eat it, you know, a piece of toast, and then that virus jumps in your mouth and it's off to the races.
Okay. So if this happens, do you just wait it out? Should you go see a doctor? What's the best thing to do if you start to notice some of these symptoms that you're talking about?
Well, it comes on quickly, and so, you know, in many cases, you might have heard, oh, you know, so-and-so's kid at daycare had it, and then you can sort of plan, I better get some Pedialyte and Gatorade, and so it comes on quickly within 12 to 48 hours of being exposed, and you might have some pain in your belly, diarrhea, vomiting, nausea. Mm. Some people get fever, headache, body aches, like a general flu type of syndrome. But where you want to get to the doctor is where you can't keep up with what's going out. What's coming in isn't keeping up with what's going out. So if the pee is less, particularly in a baby who's going to be more susceptible to this, so if the fewer wet diapers in a child, if a kid is crying and they're not really making tears, that's a red flashing light to go to the hospital.
Right.
Or, you know, lack of activity in general, those sorts of things. If you're an adult you start feeling lightheaded when you stand up, or your heart's racing, or you just can't keep the fluid in, you know, come and see us. We can help.
Yeah. The you're talking about kids, are people over 65, seniors, are they, you know, likely to catch this more than someone who is middle-aged?
They are. You know, just the immune system just doesn't work as well. After 65, you may not be able to mount a fever. You know, they may draw blood work and your white count may be normal, but that doesn't mean you're not ill. And in fact, many of the folks that we end up admitting during these surges happen to be older folks for that very reason.
Now, somebody has texted in and said, once you have neurovirus, are you immune for a while, as is the case with some other viruses?
Yeah, you're certainly immune for that period to an extent, but that doesn't mean that you won't get it again. It just might mean that the next time is a little more mild, and it certainly doesn't mean that you won't spread it to somebody else.
Now, what about RSV is also something that I'm hearing a lot of lately. You know, people getting vaccinated for COVID, getting vaccinated for the flu. Not as many people, I don't think, getting vaccinated for RSV. And in particular, if you're over the age of 65, you should, right?
Yes. In fact, even over 60, they're saying. Anyone over 60, basically, if you're over 60 and you have any kind of risk factor, if you're not perfectly healthy, and few people are perfectly healthy in their 60s, go and get that vaccine, and everybody who's 75 and older absolutely needs it. But there's other types of people that can benefit from it. So babies can get it, and pregnant women who are in their 32nd through 36 weeks of pregnancy are eligible for it. It's, you know, RSV in many people is a mild illness, but in young babies can be horrible and can be life-threatening. Not just that, but it can impact the health of the child on an ongoing basis if they have a severe infection, if they make it through. So definitely in favor of that vaccine. The other nice thing about that vaccine is it's a one-time, one-and-done, so you're not going back for booster shots.
Okay, so you get that over with, and then you're done. Can you explain RSV a little bit? I know it's a respiratory disease, but how do you get it? What are symptoms? So people are aware of all that.
Sure. So RSV stands for respiratory syncytial virus. So RSV, that's an easier way to say it, and it affects, like many of these viruses, it's a respiratory virus. It affects people at the extremes of age. We tend to see kids, young kids and babies, as well as older adults. We may incidentally diagnose it in people, in their 30s and 40s, but it just doesn't tend to be that severe for those folks, with certain exceptions. So people with asthma or COPD may actually present with a more severe form of it. But it tends to... It's in the air, so it's in droplets in the air, so you can get it by breathing in the same air that other people are breathing. It comes on within a couple of days, and it typically has a waxing and waning course, meaning that you might be sick on day one, and then you seem like you're getting better, and then the night comes in, and, if it's a child, I often hear from parents, they were fine during the day, they were playing, and then at night I heard them breathing funny and it made me nervous and I came in. And that's very classic for RSV. Where you can get into trouble, particularly with young children, is the breathing becomes an issue. They breathe so fast for such a long period of time they get tired. And that's when they need support with things like oxygen and other medications. In terms of treating it, there's not a whole lot you can do. Some kids and adults will benefit from inhalers, but they don't always work. Steroids definitely have not been shown to be super helpful, and there's definitely no place for antibiotics because it's just a virus. So 99% of the time, people coast through and do okay. Every once in a while, we have to bring people into the hospital and take care of them.
Okay, all right. Now, I know, if I remember correctly, that you can get your flu and COVID shots together. Can you also, you know, make it a threesome and get the RSV at the same time, too?
You can. Yep. There's no reason why you can't. Now, some physicians or pharmacists may recommend spreading certain vaccines out to optimize the immune response. And so I would have that conversation with the pharmacist or the doctor. But to my knowledge, yeah, you can bang them all out.
Yeah, okay. Now, if you're going to have all three, though, is there a greater chance that you might have some kind of a reaction? And I've heard people say that they don't like to group up their vaccines because if they do have a reaction, it's easier to tell which vaccine caused it if you have them individually instead of having multiple vaccinations at the same time.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with spreading them out. Neither is there anything wrong with batching them, but you're correct. If you did happen to be one of the rare people that had a reaction, then you potentially wouldn't know which vaccine caused it, and then you'd be in a pickle. So which one do I not get again, or do I skip all three, and where does that leave me in terms of being vulnerable? So certainly would advocate for either strategy is fine, and certainly doing them one at a time gives you the opportunity to isolate reactions for sure.
Yeah, here's a little reality check on our text line. 630 area code said our 2-year-old grandson caught RSVP from his big brother. As an infant, he was intubated and almost died from it. I went and got my vaccine that day, it says here. I'm 71 years old. I mean, that's how serious it is, and especially if you're very young or very old, it can be very serious very quickly.
Well, to the listener, I'm so glad that the child made it through, and thanks for sharing that story. It's true. You know, most people don't see what we see in the hospital, and so, you know, we try to be have a measured response to the respiratory season because it comes on hot and heavy, but it definitely can be severe, and so this is why we give these recommendations to folks to try and limit the risk.
Yeah, thank goodness for you guys. This is a great question from 708. Can the doctor give some tips to people to boost their immune system naturally?
Great question.
Are there things that we can do?
100%. There's so many great things that that we all can do to varying degrees, and it all comes down to preventative measures. So one is what we've already talked about. If the healthcare experts are saying, hey, here are these vaccines that are safe and effective, do your research and go get them. And we've talked about this over and over again. It's very important to help your immune system by giving it that turbocharge of a vaccine. The other is sleep. Sleep is incredibly important to building up the immune system. In fact, people that don't get enough sleep or have poor sleep quality are at higher risk for all kinds of diseases, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, and mental health issues, but also it impacts your immune system. Diet and exercise. When we say this over and over again, it almost becomes like background noise, but it's so true. It's managing your stress by getting cardiovascular activity or walking, and eating foods that are, all the four food groups with the vegetables, and trying to avoid processed foods. Those are some very basic steps that everybody can take that will definitely impact your immune system.
How do you fall on like multivitamins and things like that? I've heard some people say it's a good idea. I've heard some people say that if you're eating properly, you don't really need to take those.
Yeah, I think it depends. Some people just aren't able to transmit the vitamins to their gut, whether it's through chronic disease, like chronic kidney disease, for instance. Those folks are maybe not going to have a similar level of magnesium, for instance, that healthy people will. So there are examples where supplements can be helpful. They can also be harmful. You have to be careful if you do have, in particular, liver or kidney disease. And as you get older, sometimes your diet just, is impacted in a way that you're not getting those vitamins. So I think that's a very personalized area of medicine that you really need to talk to your doctor, maybe look at your blood work and see, you know, am I low in B12 or what does my magnesium look like? Am I at risk for low calcium, vitamin D, and have that conversation with your doctor. But I think there's a place for supplements, and I still think that we don't fully understand how they're going to be beneficial. You know, we see some signals in the data on medications like turmeric, for instance. They think it may be have an anti-inflammatory effect, but it's not 100% clear. So I think the jury's still out on a lot of this stuff, but definitely some benefit.
Yeah, very interesting. Really interesting info this week. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Have a great Sunday and Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Same to you. Thanks for having me.